have friends who study complex systems, and they've been at the forefront of my brain lately. It seems to me that a small town could be seen as a complex system where everything touches everything, touches everything. Is that even in the range of right?
I absolutely think it is. The thing about the small town is that you need all of the things that a big town does.
Mm.
You know, there's just a certain base that's there. And it's all that more difficult to manage at a small town, both, you know, when you think about resources, it's people, it's money, you know, it's just things. And so, yeah, I think it is fairly complex. The other thing about the small town is that the reach is far greater than just basic municipal services. There is an expectation on the part of the community that if there is a hole out there someplace, that the city is the one that's going to fill it. And, you know, while I, you know, have taken exception to that in some cases, I can appreciate exactly where it's coming from. I mean, it's the community and, you know, the city provides oversight on services to the community. And particularly in Kimberley over the years, mm-hmm. that has been much broader than just sewer and water and, you know, roads.
Because it was a company town and you could turn to the company for things.
Well, it's a legacy of the company town that somebody else was responsible for it.
Yeah, and now that they're gone, you know, who's left?
And the persona stays there, the it.
I will say, though, that I think we've made excellent progress in a transition away from that. With the challenges that we have from both a financial and certainly financial as it relates to infrastructure point of view, I think people in the community do understand that, you know, getting back to kind of basics, you know, to what that core level of service is an important thing for the community to do. And I'm sensing a whole lot less pressure, you know, from in particular groups in the community. You know, I'll use the term special interest group in the broadest sense. It's, you know, service clubs and, you know, things like that. Exactly.
Yeah.
And so I think we've come a long way, but you're quite right, Paula. It's definitely, there's a layer of complexity there.
Speaking of complexity.
Indeed. That's what brought it to mind.
I got a note from you that had a list of, you know, a short list of things you might want to talk about, starting with the flat tax, tourism, the RMI, or the Resort Municipality Initiative Committee, and the regional approach with St. Eugene and Cranbrook, the closure of the downtown deli, women's junior hockey, another award for the Sun Mine Solar Company activity in the area, grants for CBT for the Civic Center, Splash Park, Bootleg Trail, Flume Wrap-Up, local developers meeting, and AKBLG, which I had to look up. Sorry. Association of Kootenai and Boundary Local Governments. Is that all?
That's a complex system.
No, actually.
That was the week I
week from hell.
Yeah. It just
no, being, that's not from hell. That just is.
That's just the way it is. Yeah, that was a partial list. But normally, most of this stuff kind of stretches itself out over a period of time. But this last month or so, it's been all of these things kind of every day. There's a little bit going on. So when you talk about complexity, it has been, it's been pretty busy times.
There is a, you're a member of the council.
Mm-hmm.
But you are, you know, sort of more or less first among equals.
And the tiebreaker.
But I don't know what that means. I mean, you obviously are up to your eyeballs in dealing with these kinds of things and lots of other things. I assume other council members are up to their eyeballs dealing with these kinds of things. Is it that just that you are the focal point? Is there a special legal responsibility as the first among equals? Mm. What's the relationship between you and the other council members with respect to what we're talking about, which is the community?
Yeah, so that's a great question, Bill. And I think there's two or three different aspects to that. The first is that that as the mayor, I am one of seven elected officials. And in fact, the way it works is I'm not the tiebreaker. I vote on every issue. So the only time I'm a tiebreaker, or could be any one of the councillors could be considered a tiebreaker, mm-hmm. if it's a 4-3 vote. But I've heard that lots, and was corrected by our chief admin officer once, where I'm supposed to be voting on everything. And I think it comes from the fact that the only time that seventh vote matters is if it's 3-3 on the others. And but at the end of the day, I need to be voting on every one of the topics that come up.
It really comes from me watching Jeeves and
Wooster.
Oh, okay. So the other thing is that that even though I am one of seven votes, the chief admin officer reports to council through me. Mm. So I'm the interface, the council interface on a day-to-day basis with the operations of the city, which is through the chief administration officer. I have been spent a lot of time this past year when I'm out in the community reminding people that the mayor does not run the city. There is this perception that the mayor runs the city, but it's not. It's the chief administration officer that runs the city. But I'm tied very closely to him because council creates the strategic priorities and the direction back to staff. And it's really through the mayor that that day-to-day ongoing feedback mechanism and feedback loop happens.
And he is not an elected official and is completely then responsible to the council through you. So
correct.
For all that he's not elected and you folks are, his responsibilities are always under scrutiny from the council.
They are. And really, you know, council, the role of council is that of a governance role. Mm. It's not an operational role. And especially in small communities, we sometimes forget this. And, you know, we're out in the community talking to people and somebody complains about snow removal or some of the operational things. Of course, I will look after that. And I get a lot of calls. I mean, if people don't like what they hear from staff, I'm the person most often that gets the call. And I know there are several counselors that talk about all the calls that they get at home too, mm-hmm. talking about, and it's mostly about the operations of the city. So technically speaking, from a council point of view, we're not and should not be involved in that. It's really up to staff to manage the day-to-day operations of the city.
But you're not saying don't talk to me.
No. No, just don't, just don't dig in. Don't get involved to the point where you have usurped the authority of staff to do their job.
This is really a communications function you're talking about. I mean, the authority the council has is to hire the chief administrative officer and to oversee, as you say, the governance role. But so much of what you're talking about is communication.
It's true.
Which is how politics works, which is how a democratic system works.
So that's what this whole list then is about, is that you have raised for you, as have the other council members, concerns from the community that you then put before the staff, but they're the ones who've got to make things happen.
Right. And that's true partially. If you look at a number of things, probably the majority of things on that list, and kind of where I end up spending the majority of my time, because being the mayor is absolutely a full-time job. Mm-hmm. I mean, there is no ifs, ands, or buts about it.
Different from when you were a councilman?
Oh, completely different. Absolutely. Yeah, no, it's quite stark. As a council, as a member of council, I had one or two things that were my issues, that were my opportunities, and I would champion those. And so you've got six counselors and you've got everybody with one or two of these things that they're championing. And you come to the table with a fair number of things.
And that's still the case.
A dozen or more. And that's really the way it works. With the mayor, with me specifically, I'm spending the majority of my time on the things that are going to determine where we are 5 years from now. Mm. Not the day-to-day operations today, or at least I try and stay out of that as much as I can, but it's where are we going to be in 5 years? So the Cranbrook-Kimberley Development Initiative, for example, is one of those things. We're not going to see results on that for 5 years.
And while but you're already a year in. So many
and, okay, four. But while it does interface with staff, for example, the planning department, because in order to make that industrial development strategy succeed, we have a whole bunch of planning things that need to be done in the city. So the feedback mechanism goes back into planning for mm-hmm. zoning and land use and those kinds of things. So while there is some interface with staff, it's not on today's operation, you know, the things that are happening today, or at least it shouldn't be. And for the most cases, for the most part, is not.
So you hold those brown bag lunches, for instance, to get feedback from the community, but it's not, please fill the pothole in my street?
There are many operational things that come up, but I appreciate that Scott Somerville is there with me as the, he sits in on all of the brown bag lunches. That's basically, you know, my initiative. It's my initiative to allow the public an opportunity to present their views of things and whether those are opportunities, and many of them are. There are ideas that come to the table, or whether it's issues, and then, you know, Scott picks up on those and provides answers and, you know, kind of gets on with it. I don't provide the answers, he does, to those operational kinds of things. A lot of people want to know, where are we going and how are we going to get there? And, you know, to that extent, that's kind of my
response. So, Mayor McCormick, where are we and where are we going and how are we going to get there?
Yeah, you know what? We're completely lost, but we're making good time.
Oh, there's that compass.
I'm kidding. Know what... I'm completely kidding on that.
Or will
can
the
you edit that
will
out?
The circle, will the circle be unbroken?
Yeah, I heard that saying once, and it always amused me, and I always loved it because more often than not, that is very descriptive of progress, isn't it?
Do you have any of those particular things?
It's always a mistake to confuse motion with progress.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
And there's a tendency to do that.
So, and kind of my favorite from a sales background point of view is mistaking activity for movement. Mm. And it is so true. You know, we tend to focus in on our activity and we feel really good about being busy. But at the end of the day, it's all about the movement and being
so
able to
measure. So are any
that.
Of these things on this very long list that's only half of what you could have told us, that are those activities? Or is there a general sense of movement in this May 2016 that we need to know about?
Yeah, no, there's a sense of movement on pretty much everything. And I think, you know, when I'm in the, you know, talking to people wherever I am in the community, I think everybody's feeling, you know, a general sense of movement, which is really positive.
In the right direction?
In the right direction. Yeah, no, absolutely.
Movement or progress?
No, there's movement in the direction that I think by definition at some point in time will be progress.
Well, I was looking at this, and maybe it's just my perspective. These all are easily put into the context of what's going to happen over the horizon.
Mm-hmm.
The tax issue is obviously has to do with how we fund all of this. Tourism mm-hmm. is part of the economic basis going forward.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the downtown Delhi closing is just a matter of your concern about the business. I assume this is a development-oriented concern.
Yeah, no, we have had, in the past couple of years, we've had three or four businesses in town that have been long-standing businesses right. that have closed because the owners have retired. And
that's not a bad thing.
It's not. It's great for them. I mean, they've you know, done their thing, and they've, you know, provided service to the community and have done
but
some great
things. But
they would
like probably to have gotten their investment back out or realized some benefit on selling it rather than closing it.
Yeah.
So the closing, I mean, every time I see something close, particularly on the Palazzo, I get a little squeamish.
Yeah. Well, so I guess there's a couple of things to that, Bill. The first is that many of these businesses, a restaurant, for example, and I'll use the Gasthaus as an example. The Gasthaus was Peter Rathpoller.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how do you sell that? Right? Mm-hmm. Because if Peter and Anna Marie aren't part of the Gasthaus anymore, it's not the Gasthaus.
Right.
So there, some of these businesses have been so identified with those owners that it would be impossible for somebody else to come in and pick up, you know, where they have left off.
But having said all these closings, there's also been a whole wave of openings.
There have, very much so. And I guess that's the second thing, is that in a part of the issue with Kimberley is we are a retail environment.
Mm.
I mean, we just don't have even a lot of light industrial. We have a basic minimum amount of that in town to provide some services. So generally speaking, you would look around town here and say, we are a retail environment. And the reality around retail is that you always have things turning over. And in fact, in order to maintain a healthy retail environment, you need to have that turnover. If everything stayed exactly the same, people would get completely bored with it, particularly visitors coming to town. Same old, same old.
And which part, it was for many, many years.
And part of what you want to do is to see what's new. You visit the old, you know, but at the end of the day, new things happening are very important as well. So,
and it's hard to let go of the old.
It is. And in particular for us, we had a really interesting dynamic with retail here because we've got Cranbrook so close to us. And what we had were a number of stores that had the same goods or services that the big box stores have in Cranbrook. And there was this real hate, you know, for Cranbrook and the big box stores. The fact is that those big box stores enable people to move to Kimberley because a lot of people moving from metropolitan areas want big box stores to be able to go and shop at. We don't want them here, but to have them that close to us gives us an advantage to many, many other communities in certainly the East Kootenays, but the Kootenays in general. So, but that transition was extremely painful away from similar services to ones that are unique to Kimberley. And we've done pretty good at that transition. And the restaurant environment, I think, is probably, you know, worthy of note because today, I'm not sure what the percentage is, a third of the folks coming to frequent our restaurants are from Cranbrook. And this is exactly the kind of dynamic that we want because they're a 20,000 person market. We're a 7,000 person market. And by combining those, and actually the region is about 35,000 people. And so
that doesn't include the visitors.
No, that's right. It's just their local residents. So the new businesses opening up are taking this into consideration. This is the broader market. What product or service can I start here
that doesn't
exist in any of the locations and caters to that entire market? Now that transition has been underway since 2009, 10, 11. It's been 5 or 6 years now. I remember the low ebb in the transition was about 2011.
Yeah, when we moved here.
When you walk through the Platzl,
whoa!
Not only did you have a larger than normal number of vacancies, because in a retail environment, you always have vacancies. It was a larger number, but there were for sale signs in every window. Yeah. And so people walking through there, it's the worst possible scenario for a resort community.
Yeah. It was scary. So is this what the mayor thinks about and does? What role does the city have in this? You're talking retail and private enterprise and stuff. Where's the city fit into that?
Well, our job, as a municipality is to ensure the environment to foster business is as positive as it can possibly be. So that, again, comes from a planning function.
And that's why you're so excited about getting our big road up to the
Absolutely.
Paved.
Piece of infrastructure that we're responsible for that's going to have a huge impact
on
the residents that live up there for sure, but every visitor that comes to town goes up that road. And if you look at things like infrastructure and tourism, it's that perception and what people see that causes them to tell people about the community, a positive or a negative. So those things are critically important.
In terms of heat, my sense is that, and you probably have a radically different sense, flat tax generated a good deal of heated exchange.
Good debate.
And Kamenko Gardens generated a great deal of heat. And those are, they're not unrelated, they seem different. But tell me about those.
In short, tell us about Bruce.
Briefly.
That's a pretty open-ended question.
Yes, it is. It's not even a question.
Well, I guess they are they're related to the extent that it's about change.
Exactly.
And pick anything, and change is going to have folks on both sides of the equation that are going to debate whether it's good or bad. They are quite different, though, because in the case of in the case of the flat tax, it had to do with balancing today with tomorrow. And, at the end of the day, there are consequences to every decision that are made. Some of those consequences are obvious, some are not. And in the case of the flat tax, I was arguing about consequences that were 10 years down the road. And it's really hard for people to relate to 10 years down the road. It's almost impossible.
You're also dealing with the past 10 years and those legacy issues influence looking forward.
Right. And also with the fact that we are a mixed community. We are a resort community at the same time as we are, you know, a legacy community from the mining days and what I call a real community, you know, not based on tourism, but based on real people in a great community. And so this was a really complex issue. And it's one that spans, as I said, out 10 years. As I mentioned earlier, that's my job, is to look at where are we going to be 5 and 10 years from now. And so, this was an issue that, caused a lot of debate, but it's really complicated. And I don't think, generally speaking, the residents, the taxpayers, necessarily understood exactly what that issue was about in its broadest sense. But you know what? At the end of the day, we as a council, we rise and fall on the decisions we make, and that decision is made today. And if it proves that there is something detrimental happening or there is a consequence of that we need to deal with, then we'll deal with it.
I don't think you're suggesting that the people who voted on the other side of that were ignoring the future.
No.
Part of this is a question of how to get to that future and what that future is going to look like, and there are grounds for legitimate disagreements about what's the best way to get to that future.
That's true. I guess what I'm suggesting is there are many different layers or many different elements to certain decisions, and this was one of those that was layered. And if you look at one of those layers and say, this is the foundation on which, you know, we are considering this and making a decision, that's one thing. If you add the next layer in or the next layer or the next layer, it may impact what your view is on that first layer. And, it's just every individual, we see things differently. And that's why we have 7 of us as elected officials, is to, you know, make sure that we get 7 different views of exactly the same issue.
And you have a whole community who want to have some input into that too.
It's more than just the seven. No, that's true. And there are certain issues that it's easy to communicate to the community what the issue is, and there are others that it's really difficult to communicate. And so the flat tax thing was one that was really difficult to communicate.
Well, in a sense, the Kaminko Gardens is the same sort of issue. It goes to the future. It goes to the past. It has to do with priorities. We've got finite resources. How do you allocate those resources?
And one of our resources
And frankly, how did that come out? Where are we with Kaminko Gardens?
Kaminko Gardens, the issue has been blown way beyond where the issue actually is. Kaminko Gardens was used as an example of one of the city assets that is under review. All of our city assets are under review right now, especially those that are costing the city money, where there's deficit subsidies that are going to, you know, keep things open.
They're not self-supporting.
The Kaminko Gardens, the Conference Center, what is one of the other...
Center 64?
The other big ones. Center 64 is operated by the Arts Council, and they operate completely independent of the city. We own the building, but we don't subsidize. We provide grants to them, but it's not the same thing. So there's a few of the facilities out there. The Civic Center, the Aquatic Center, exactly. You know, these are large deficits that these buildings operate under. So we're looking for efficiencies. We're looking for ways to save money. We're looking for ways to make money. And no stone will be left unturned, including Kaminko Gardens. And so it's unfortunate that was one of the ones that was, hit the radar screen. But
well, it's also important to say things like the Columbia Basin Trust has stepped forward to give us some money. One of the short, the limited resources is time. And we are at our 20 minutes and counting.
You're kidding.
I don't want to abuse either you or those watching this.
Well, we must have hit at least 2 things on that list.
Well, I
but they're
wanna...
all. I, but Let's do a test. One sentence.
Yeah.
As to what you tell me why these are on the list. We talked about the deli, but why did you have that on this list? One sentence. Two sentences.
This is a test.
So, the deli was on the list because of what it has represented to the community. Ruth Ramden and her business, was that's represented to the community for the last 10 years. It's a big deal.
And it's representative of the kinds of challenges that we're facing looking forward.
Yep.
Women's junior hockey.
Well, women's junior hockey, that's an opportunity to increase ice time allocation as far as our arenas are concerned. They're operating in a deficit. The more money we can get in on that, the better. And it's also an opportunity to promote Kimberley to a much, much broader world.
That's two sentences.
He said two.
Yes, that's the end.
An award,
you put an and in there.
Another award for the
exclamation mark.
Yeah, with a finite number of subordinate clauses.
So the Sun Mine is attracting interest in other solar farms that mean we have a potential for creating a cluster.
Great.
There is no employment in these farms themselves, but if we create the cluster, we can then attract industry in support of that, both goods and services wise.
Who gave us the award?
Actually, it wasn't us that got it. It was Michelle Despot from EcoSmart, right. And it was an engineering award, a national engineering award.
Wonderful.
Yeah, it was outstanding.
And presumably that subsumes the next point, which is solar company activity in the area.
Yeah.
Okay. CBT grants for the Civic Center Splash Park and Bootleg Trail?
These are projects that, had CBT not been there to fund them, would have never happened. And all of them are highly visible that are going to create a very positive impact on the community.
And it's one of those lessons that money doesn't have to come from the taxpayer's base.
Right. And also that, CBT, through their granting, I mean, we take them for granted a lot.
No, we shouldn't.
But we should not. And they have an extremely high impact on all the communities in the basin.
Well, the basin.
Which is our collective way of saying thank you, CBT.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you bet.
Flume wrap up. Could we put a period on that one?
Yeah, the landscaping and the fencing is going up. It's all from a grant from CBT, ironically. The bridge is going in starting today, we'll have the swimming holes in operation here very soon.
Well, and that's back to how important it has been over the last 5 years that the city stepped up and made it much, much more beautiful than utilitarian, which is just a huge plus for the city.
All of the elected officials from the Kootenays were here at the local government meeting, and we did tours of the Sun Mine and the Mark Creek Rehab. We actually walked up.
There's a lot of them.
And we got as much positive feedback on the Mark Creek Rehab as we did on the Sun Mine. They were both perceived to be outstanding projects that brought the community to a very positive light. So while it may have been function that started that, at the end of the day, it's completely transformed the view people have of our downtown area and our city.
And the local developers meeting.
So we have about a dozen developers in town, residential mostly,
developers of
land developers. And so this is all about, where are we with land development in town, and where are we headed, and what do we need to do as a municipality to be able to support those developers in being successful with the land developments they have. We have several that have struggled over the years, residential, mostly because of the recession. But at the end of the day, here we are. And while we've had a lot of new home developments start, it's still not the kind of volume that we need in order to get new tax money into town. We need industrial development to go along with that, and we need a much higher level of residential development. So this was an opportunity to get everybody in the room and, talk about what our strategy is and where are we going with this thing.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Happy May.